I came here to find safety. But one is never safe from the past. We all have a story just waiting to be claimed.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the Dream Bridge,
this is Tyler Orton dropping Dunkirk references on y'all.
Like, hey, Christopher Cam, Nolan.
Do you know what Dunkirk is? I don't think you do.
We had a major motion picture about 3 years ago that informed all of us what Dunkirk was.
And you never saw it, and I still don't think you know what Dunkirk is. So, Cam, yeah, we are tackling Star Trek Picard series premiere Remembrance, episode 1 out of 10. You and I, we've been a little bit wary about the potential of Star Trek Picard series kind of disappointing us. Like, there's just too much buildup.
There's been plenty of times in the last decade plus where well-known IPs were brought back with all the fanfare. A lot of original cast members came back, and it was like, here we go, guys. We're going to do it again. And we were disappointed.
You're talking about X-Files. X-Files is just... It's the most egregious, I think.
Well, I don't know. Like, I think they actually got some really good episodes out of it.
They did, but it was a lot of disappointment. Just,
sure.
It was just highs and lows, you know. And I get this sense there's going to be a little consistency with Star Trek Picard. We sat down, and I was kind of sucked in from moment one. And I came in with maybe not necessarily lowered expectations, but just a wariness about the entire endeavor.
Well, one of the most confidence-inspiring things I saw was actually you sent me a link or just like a headline that a TV critic had posted about what he thought of the show, you know, very non-spoilery. But I saw a similar story. It was Patrick Stewart on Entertainment Weekly saying that it was important to him that this show not feel fan service-y.
Yes.
Which, you know, maybe you look at something like Terminator Dark Fate this past year, which was very fan service-y, and I don't think anyone really cared that much.
Mind you, for a show that seems to be avoiding a lot of that, like, really eye-rolling fan service, it opens with a shot of the Enterprise-D, and you zoom into 10-4, which, look, let's be honest, that is a way to really grab everyone's attention.
It is, but it's also tied organically to the character of Picard and his past life experience. It doesn't feel like this episode, we'll dig deeper into the episode, but it doesn't feel like it's just an exercise in nostalgia.
No.
Because I will say this felt really weird. And I don't mean that in a good or a bad way. I just mean in terms of the visual look, the tone of the show, it felt weird because it didn't feel like TNG. It didn't feel necessarily like the, you know, Berman era movies. And I'm excited to, you know, as we go through the series, get used to kind of the new tone of these Picard stories. But it did feel like a new kind of original thing.
It felt weird to you, but not necessarily off-putting, right?
No, not off-putting. Just as in, like, I'm going to have to calibrate myself to kind of get into the vibe of what this version of Picard is. Kind of the same way I did with Discovery, really, for the first... Probably took me 2 episodes before it was like, okay, I get the vibe of this show.
Well, I tell you why I am in it for the long haul. I think, obviously...
Well, you don't have a choice.
I don't have a choice, but what it was is just the pacing of this. Like, this is perfect. I know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
I know who the characters are. They establish Picard's life in a really simple way, in a real easy way, and you can kind of pick up on the idea that he's brought in these Romulan refugees through a sense of duty, and they're friends, and they're humanizing these aliens, but they are humanizing what would otherwise just be kind of character sort of mustache twirling species that we've seen in, what, 99% of their appearances? I mean, there's some episodes like, say, The Defector, you know, where we get a little bit of more nuance there with some of the characters. But
And a lot of the portrayals that a lot of the general audience would have seen the Romulans pop up in would be the J.J. Abrams 2009 movie and even Nemesis, which, again, pretty mustache-twirling stuff.
Although Worf did promise that he's going to appreciate that they fight with honor. You know, we got right. that. So there you go. Oh, and Picard also owes one of them a pint of Romulan ale. I think he made that promise over a view screen.
Okay.
So anyways. Yeah, but the moment is you got the Data and Picard. That is your opening moment. You have mm-hmm. the two of them. And I think they're
well, smart. Like, start with the familiar.
Yeah, and what we do get out of this, and I want to touch on this, though, because I think there's this overarching sense that Picard has unfinished business. Picard says, I don't want the game to end. Mm-hmm. He looks at, and in the second dream sequence, he looks at Data's painting and he sees that it's unfinished. It's up to Picard to finish his painting.
Right.
You get the sense that Picard even says it, you know, like, I haven't died, but I don't feel like I've been living.
Right.
There is like motivation underneath this character. And I think that's honestly the way that you convince somebody like Patrick Stewart to come back and reprise a character that's so iconic that maybe he would have been willing to otherwise move away from over, you know, the last two decades.
Well, don't you get the sense in recent years that Patrick Stewart seems maybe more so than in the last couple decades really interested in acting jobs that kind of push his comfort zone? I look at, you know, his performance in Logan, which is not kind of the standard Professor X performance that he'd given in, you know, some of the past movies. You also look at, say, Blunt Talk, which is him kind of doing something well outside of his normal comfort zone. And you know, you go back to the decades past where you would see him pop up in a lot of things that probably didn't even deserve his, you know, his talent, say like Conspiracy Theory or, you know, Masterminds, those movies of the 90s. It feels like Patrick Stewart in his advancing years really does have this new passion for digging in deep into acting jobs that are outside of what we've seen before.
Yeah, for sure. And look, let's talk about like the opening sequence, though. You know, like you get the very familiar sights of, say, a 10-4, though. Mm-hmm. And it is fascinating to see how maybe parallel to the fans, there's some people kind of stuck in a certain romanticized period of time. And
sure.
I do like that they are addressing that there. The central mystery, though, it surrounds this character that we're introduced to, one Daj. I also love the fact that they don't have to draw out a mystery over 8 episodes, one in which we've already figured it out about, like, you know, what, 5 minutes into the show.
Were you a little concerned initially about the way this character Daj was being set up? Like, did it feel a little bit familiar sci-fi tropey?
In the opening sequence?
Or even just, you know, say the first half hour or something.
I'd say the opening sequence made me think like, oh, it's going to be one of those mystery women sorts of things. She needs help.
And she has amazing warrior abilities that are, you know, unexplained.
You got like kind of the Serenity Firefly sort of vibes there. And I was just like, okay. But the thing is, and then at the 30 minute mark, they kill her off.
And I was like, thank God.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it's because the Romulan agent does a Dilophosaurus attack on her.
What the hell was that?
That was, that's you.
You thought Dilophosaurus? I thought Xenomorph. But,
okay. Yeah. I was thinking it's more like you and you eating really, really quick, you know, Cam. Just like spewing all over the place.
Of course, yeah.
Monty Python and the Meaning of Life right there.
Right, yeah. So. Mr. Creosote?
Yes. but I was just like, okay, the thing is, the episode kept surprising me. There's mm-hmm. stuff like Jean-Luc is walking around speaking French to his dog.
Yeah.
It's like those kind of little moments. And that's what I alluded to like very early on when he's establishing his life with these Romulan refugees that are helping care for his estate. He's giving them agency. He's giving them like a sense of purpose and duty, as well as he says like that sequence in which could have been like one of the most infuriating like exposition dumps in which he's there with the jerk reporter.
Do they not vet these reporters at all?
Well, you know what? I'll be honest. Like, I think if you agree to talk to a reporter, they can ask you whatever they want. But
I would love to know what news network she represented, though.
She represented FNN. That's the Federation News Network. So
I'm very angry.
Well, I would say if I was in her position, I would use more of the velvet glove technique.
Sure.
Yeah, but addressing what was going on there, I do like the fact that it was actually an intriguing exposition dump in that you had a lot of ground to cover
mm-hmm.
and you had one character who wanted one thing and you had another character who wanted another thing. I'm talking about the reporter and Picard.
Yeah.
And there's a tug of war, a push and pull that was going on. This is actually a very well done sequence that could have otherwise just been like a really kind of sloppy sort of kind of grating sequence that I would not have cared for.
I think it helps a lot too that the information that she's trying to draw out of him, or that she's providing herself, is information we actually want.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of the time in this type of scenario, it's maybe a character we're not as familiar with. And they're like, tell us about your past. And they're like, well, you know, I worked for you. And you're just like, who is this person? I don't really care.
It's when Dodge was telling her dad was like a botanist who named like a breed of flower after. I was like, okay. You're from Seattle?
That's okay. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Way to go.
But like you're saying, that he wants to talk about the supernova impacts, you know, and she's saying like, well, why did you retire from the Starfleet? And this is what I think is very prescient in which they're addressing what's going on right now. He said, well, Starfleet gave up after a certain point with this relocation efforts. Mm-hmm. They withdrew. And you look at what's going on with very much other parts of the world. We think about our neighbors down in the United States. We think about our neighbors across the pond in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
There's kind of this push away from what would have otherwise been considered like kind of global civic duty to a certain degree.
Right.
And I like that they're addressing that. And again, you're letting Patrick Stewart play something that I think he's very passionate about, that he's interested in addressing too.
Well, I would have to imagine there was probably a list of things that he wanted from a new Star Trek series for him to come back that would get him just intellectually interested in doing this again. And I think he cared a lot about, having more like real world political metaphors in this show.
Yeah. So we eventually make our way over to Okinawa, which, I love the Bruce Maddox shout outs. Mm. And we also have, they're planting seeds for the, and then Bruce Maddox disappeared. He hasn't been seen since. And I'm just like, okay, so I guess we're going to get a Bruce Maddox. Like, can I be honest? Like, if I saw an older Bruce Maddox pop up, I'm not sure I would necessarily like recognize him.
Do they recast him with someone known?
I hope not. I genuinely hope not. But as you're saying, I don't think it really matters.
Yeah.
Right. But
I mean, I guess if they're bringing back the original actor who played Hugh at some point, then it would. I feel like they're going to keep with the original Maddox.
And also, from a budget perspective, I'm sure they could fork over that dough, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But I think it's cool that they are planting these seeds where it's easy for somebody who's not really familiar with mythology, or maybe more familiar on more of kind of the surface level.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like people that are going to know, oh yeah, Measure of a Man. I totally get that reference to Maddox, you know? And what else was it? Was it Data's Day that he was writing the letter back and forth to Maddox as well?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool that we are getting those little shutouts there too. So I'm digging this. I didn't quite follow along with the technobabble and when they're explaining.
Do you ever?
No. But I think they tried to make us understand. And I have to be honest, that's kind of when I tune out, where it's just like big words and all I need to know is what they say at the very end of the sentence.
Are you talking about when Picard visits the Daystrom Institute and talks to Allison Pill's character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agnes.
Agnes. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things is when she kind of like gives like a short answer. He's like, no, lay it all out for me.
Yes.
It's like, really? Do you want to hear the longer answer? Okay, here we go.
But the thing is, they never really do that in TV or movies where, they always try
they
to
do
give
the opposite usually. Yeah,
yeah. So I'm just like, okay, well, here we go. So that was fun to see. Just either like, I can appreciate the different look and the different feel of the series. I've been watching a lot of TNG episodes recently, and I think I saw there's a story that I think it was in Variety, and they had, it was Patrick Stewart's big interview in there, and they kind of described TNG as a little lo-fi, but I was like, I took that and I was like, well, wait, is that fair? I've been watching it in Blu-ray, but honestly, like relative to kind of like the way that TV is presented nowadays, I think lo-fi is a fair way to describe it now. This is not going for that lo-fi look. You can just look at how free the cameras are to move in a series like this versus more kind of that static, close up master shot sort of, style that they went for back in the day.
Well, yeah, there was much more of a template feel to network television in the 80s when TNG starts. So it makes a lot more sense. Whereas nowadays, most, TV makers are striving to be more, cinematic and try to have their visuals look, if not budget-wise, at least visually, is maybe as graceful or as ambitious as what you can see on the big screen.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that this would be brought into the Picard world. And, this show looks every bit as good, if not better, than, the majority of the movies that the TNG crew did. So, I think that's definitely, that's where we're headed.
Okay. So, talking about the new characters that we're being introduced here, we're all very familiar with Picard. Let's start with Dodge.
Yeah.
Like you said, I was a little bit worried because it's like, young, mysterious girl who needs our hero's help. And it's just like, not this old trope again. By the end of the episode, look, we're dealing with her twin, Sochi. So I'm just like, okay, so there's something a little different going on here. And Sochi seems to be more self-aware. She's talking about how it's her job, it's Nurok. That's another character we can discuss. But Nurok's saying like, well, I know you don't want to, you know, be fixing everybody else all day long, and then after you get back from work, you have to deal with somebody else's problems yet some more. So I'm just like, okay, so they're planting some interesting little seeds about what this twin android is all about.
Well, I like that they faked us out with the marketing, too. You know, all the trailers very much sold Dodge as the character that was going to be the driving force of Season 1 Picard.
Yeah.
And when they, killed her off at the half-hour mark or whatever, I was like, awesome. You got us. Like, you had us all kind of pulled into... boy, this Picard may have a bit of a derivative storyline, potentially. That's a bit of a concern, to suddenly going like, wait, where are we going?
Yes.
And, I mean, they also were pretty smart in that they didn't really overemphasize that this was going to be so much driven by, you know, Data's influence on, you know, obviously the storyline.
We should address the fact that essentially she is Data's daughter somehow. I'm sure that'll become much more clear about that, but I guess it is connected to the Bruce Maddox as well, so that's pretty cool. I gotta ask you, Cam, where on earth are the police forces investigating this murder and attack that took place in Dodge's home?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah, she seems to be on the lam, and the only people able to track her down were Romulan agents. So
it would seem, yes.
Okay. The other thing is, how long has she been with this boyfriend? Does this seem like date number 15 or like date number 5?
It seemed pretty early.
Yeah.
I would have said maybe boyfriend was maybe jumping the gun.
Yeah.
But
that's how she described him.
Yeah. No, she definitely did. And I don't know.
Okay. Because she didn't seem all that torn up to like, she saw like a knife go right through his chest. And then,
Definitely violence we didn't see maybe on Next Generation.
No. Not unless you. Counts Genesis, in which we get to watch like that arachnoid version of Worf tear people in half. But
it definitely feels more like the movie version of the violence for the TNG crew, like where you had like Shinzon being impaled on the pole and stuff like that. More of that movie type of tone.
Especially watching her and the Romulan just kind of melt away from that acid, which was just bizarre, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember when we were talking about Discovery Season 1, and we had a, you know, debate ongoing for a couple of weeks, I think, about how we were really questioning whether the sort of the darker, more intense elements of Discovery were a good or maybe a bad thing, because you want Star Trek to kind of be available to anyone, because it, like, Next Generation drew in so many young people. The original series drew in so many young people. Is that a great thing if you're... series, your new Star Trek series on the air is kind of like more like teens and adults only. I don't know that Picard's gonna appeal to the young ones though.
I don't know. Watching the title character struggle to run during the action sequence, I did get a bit of a laugh. There were a couple of shots where you could see that it was actually his stunt double that was jogging.
I was
just like, okay, you got it. It's not quite TOS level stunt doubles, especially watching that on a Blu-ray.
Right.
But,
where it's like an entirely different human being that's very visibly not William Shatner on screen.
He's like redheaded with a mustache.
Yeah. So. Like 6'7".
So look, I think we're down with whatever this Dodge / Soji journey is.
Well, at this point, do you even have a sense of what this journey is? Like, you know, they really did kind of pull the rug out from under us. And we only kind of get this reveal of this Dr. Asher character, this sister, in those last, like, you know, minute and a half or something like that. So it's a great hook for me to go like, okay, I don't know where this show's going based on everything they told me in advance, which, again, I totally appreciate. But it also makes it difficult to say, where is this show going?
Well, it makes me just go back to Picard, where Picard says, okay, it was my mission to keep this woman safe. She is connected to me in a way that makes her very, very important to me. I failed in that. But look, if she has a sister who would also be Data's daughter, it is up to me to find this. So I think I'm tackling more from the perspective of Picard at this point versus whatever Dr. Asher is up to. I can't even wager a guess.
Right.
Although, you see where she's hanging out?
Yeah.
In a Borg cube / Romulan reclamation site.
Yes.
Which is, maybe we can talk about Nurok at this point, where I don't think we've ever seen a character portrayed quite this way, especially a Romulan character with his English accent and a bit of a some sort of neuro-Caesar. I don't know. Like, he just seemed very intriguing to me. Like, I'm totally sold on Harry Treadway's performance.
He was definitely not the standard Romulans we saw on Next Generation.
Yes. I think they're like, can we get a better haircut?
Yeah.
You know, like, we
and
don't.
Some stubble.
Yeah, a little stubble. Yeah. It's pretty good. Like, but the thing is, like, the Romulans we're so used to seeing, though, they're all within military.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Look at the military haircuts. You know, it's like kind of the crew cuts that you see. It'd go to show that, like, civilian life, definitely different. And what happens if everyone's just a civilian now, as we would assume is the case with the Romulans. But honestly, I'm sure there's still elements that would be roaming around, even though 900 million people have been relocated.
Sure. But also, I mean, the Romulans on Picard's vineyard seem very different than the Romulans we know so well, too. So
yeah.
I like that the show is taking very standard elements of Star Trek and just putting a little bit of a different spin on it that makes it interesting and has a little bit of that sense of discovery to it where we don't feel like, oh, okay, cool, Romulan, yeah, got it. We feel like there's actually something to learn and to grow from, which I'm always down for.
Before we get into some Borg cube speculation, maybe let's go back to Agnes, Alison Pill character. There's a moment where she just kind of like chuckled, mm-hmm. and I just loved it. It's just like we haven't really seen a Star Trek character just like react or laugh to like a remark made in that way. I think there's a lot of intriguing stuff that they can do with her as a character. And so we only got like one brief scene with her, but I want to see more.
I really like how the Kurtzman era has taken a different approach on how characters behave on Star Trek. We've seen that a lot on Discovery, especially season 2. It really seemed to open up a lot in terms of people behaving more like people.
Hmm.
And I'm totally down for more of that on Picard as well. You know, I think there will be people that maybe have issues with that because of the tone of the TNG universe, you know, from all those 7 seasons and movies and the way the characters behaved with one another. But I do think there's a lot of room for these characters who are especially, they're not in Starfleet. So there's a lot more room to kind of have different types of personalities brought into the show and bounce off Picard.
What do you think criticisms would be from maybe some of those fans that only want to watch, you know, seasons 3 through 6 of TNG?
I thought you were going to say just season 2.
Like, there are some fans that they only really like seasons 3 through 6, and nothing's going to satisfy them. But watching this, I think they're going to be intrigued. They're going to tune in for some Star Trek Picard. Do you think, I don't know, it's the fact that the Jean-Luc that we know and love, he is a bit of a changed man at this point?
He's changed, but he's recognizable.
Yeah.
And that goes a long way, I think, to keeping fans hooked, is it's recognizable. It doesn't feel like, do you remember Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? You're like,
I've tried to wipe it from my memory.
Most have. But, you know, you see Harrison Ford there and you're like, he's in the suit, you know.
No, he's in a refrigerator.
That's also true. But, you know, he's in the hat, he's got the whip, but it all feels weird. Like, it feels like kind of a facsimile of the original thing. That's not what this felt like. It felt like he was back in the skin of Jean-Luc Picard, and I think that's enough for fans to latch on to.
I think the key, though, is that he's not in uniform, save for that dream sequence.
Sure.
And I thought it was also good to see him in the old-school uniform because he's trying to, you know, go back to, I guess, you know, 2369.
Yeah.
But I think that's would have been maybe a step too far if, like, they're trying to put him back in a Starfleet sort of role. I think that would have looked a little bit too much like, I don't know, like karaoke to a certain degree.
Well, we were both very concerned when the initial reports were coming out that there was going to be a Picard series. We were really concerned it was going to be like Patrick Stewart on the bridge of a ship with a whole new crew. And you're like, okay, is this what we're doing, really?
Yeah.
Because at that point, we didn't necessarily have reason to have as much confidence in the Kurtzman factory to tackle this, you know, the return of Picard in a way that would be deserving of Patrick Stewart's participation. And it looks like they really have, but at the time we were very concerned it was going to be that karaoke thing.
Yeah, I think the idea that you and I were just hanging on to is that he'd be like Commandant of Starfleet Academy.
Yeah.
You know, because then we thought, like, okay, you can establish new adventures with new characters, and he's just there as kind of the wise person to give some guidance to these people.
Which in some ways we might get still.
Yeah.
Like, there is a sense, like, we're seeing that a lot of the cast members on who have, you know, didn't necessarily all pop up in this episode, but who have been cast on the show, a lot of them are, you know, they do skew younger, and he is going to be, I think, a little more that mentor figure.
Well,
so.
And how do you think they are, we're only 46 minutes in,
yeah,
but how do you think they are dealing with kind of the characters that we know and love? We've got the Data stuff. I think you and I are both very happy with how they've treated Data in all of this. You know, they're giving meaning to Data's character beyond the grave, and I don't think fans are really satisfied where we left off with him.
No, they're definitely not. And the way that Data went out in Nemesis was very unsatisfying, and I like that they're giving that little bit of a spark of hope of the concept, the idea, sort of the dream of what Data was continuing, and giving something for, you know, Jean-Luc to pursue and maybe help, you know, empower to some degree, which would be a good band-aid on the whole Data exit in Nemesis. And I mean, we got B4, who was, I think, intended as that band-aid at the end of that movie. And I love what this episode did to B4.
That moment where they pulled him out of a drawer and then they're like, he looks just like Data, and he's got like this like sort of look on his face. I thought that was pretty. You and I both chuckled.
Yeah. My favorite part was when they say, like, you know, Data uploaded his his programming into B4, but it didn't really work.
Yeah. So it further erodes the ending of Star Trek Nemesis. So it's just like, great.
This feel in some ways like them trying to erase Nemesis a little bit? The importance of Nemesis, maybe.
Would anyone care?
No one cares. Yeah. I always just think that's really interesting. And you see that a lot nowadays where, for example, I referenced earlier Terminator Dark Fate, which completely ignored everything post-Terminator 2. I think it's always kind of interesting when franchises look at chapters that didn't work and go like, hey, let's try and at least, in this case, they're not retconning the movie, but they're reducing the importance of it in some ways.
Yeah, which I'm fine with. But
yeah, I'm fine.
One thing that I was a little baffled by is the shout out to Insurrection with the captain's yacht being prominently featured in the Starfleet archive there. I'm just like,
I did so not pick up on that.
I was like, who? It was very prominent though. It was in that shot. Did you notice the Stargazer in there?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it was in the same shot with the Stargazer. I'm just like, Who's been yearning for an Insurrection like shout out? I mean, it's a movie that I think you and I both think people should give more leeway to. Mm-hmm. Rewatch it with an open mind. But that was intriguing to me.
What were they missing in that room that they should have had? Any props that jump out to you that you wish that had been in that room?
But the problem is like, wasn't everything like destroyed in Generations?
Yeah.
It's like, I was like, how did he hang on to the Captain Picard Day poster after Generations? You know, I was just like, that must have been like tucked underneath his uniform while he was fighting Sorin or something.
Yeah.
I was just like,
I think they should have brought back that archaeological find,
yeah,
that thing that he picked up in Generations and put back down.
Well, yeah. I think he like tossed it over his shoulder, and the thing was like 100,000 years old.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
which was so important to him in that episode of TNG.
I would have laughed if there was like a fish tank somewhere in there. You know, that would have been okay. Or what if like a wax figure of Guinan was just like frozen?
We might not need a wax figure. Developments up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think like it's all over social media, but especially Patrick Stewart like went on The View and he invited Whoopi Goldberg to come back for season 2. He said he was extending an invite on behalf of Alex Kurtzman. So she said yes. She said she absolutely loved her time there. So it looks as if we'll. I'm hopeful for maybe more light to be shed on the Picard-Guinan relationship. It was always so weird to me.
Yes.
It seemed like an extremely intimate friendship, one in which there was attraction shared, but they just never really spelled out what it all meant. And, you know, I'm not saying it was completely frustrating, but I definitely hope that they kind of dig into it just a little bit more.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, when we look at the cast, the main cast of TNG, I feel like when those movies end, there's a fair amount of resolution to where those characters are going. Worf more so because of Deep Space Nine. But, the only one I think that I have real questions about is Crusher. But outside of that, I feel pretty confident in where they all went. except Guinan. Like, Guinan is one, she's not in the main cast, but she's a character who's very prominent on TNG that I've never had a real sense of resolution to.
No.
You know, she pops up in, you know.
She's still on the carousel cam.
Yeah, exactly.
She's doing circles.
Riding around
Nexus.
That carousel.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very important if you're going to bring back characters, bring back the ones that we have those lingering questions about. So that's exciting.
What did you think of the Worf shout out where they use that publicity still from Sins of the Father, like during the newscast? Like, I gotta laugh
at that.
That
was pretty funny.
You know?
Yeah.
You and I were chuckling at all the publicity shots. It was like, yeah, Patrick Stewart, like season 3.
Yeah.
Like, that was amusing. They also went with like him in his dress uniform from like Insurrection.
Yeah.
So somebody's big on Insurrection within the producers here. So,
although there's definitely some, you know, nods to Nemesis as well, because you get the Blue Skies song opening the episode, which of course is the song Data sang at the wedding. I thought that was interesting.
That's one word for it. Yeah.
I guess there's no other song choice though, really, for Data, is there? To kick it off with. I mean, he played like, instrumental music on the show for sure, but I guess there's no like kind of pop songs to open with.
I'm trying to think what would be.
Oh, Pop Goes the Weasel, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be really awkward.
I'm just hoping we could have seen Miles O'Brien in the background playing some cello. Like,
oh,
that,
of course.
That would have been.
No, the upright bass.
Okay. Well, no, he was a cellist.
He was, but he's advanced now.
Oh,
he's
okay.
The upright bass now.
He just wants to jam with Riker.
That's right.
Is Riker going to be playing trombone when Picard shows up at his cabin with Troy?
Ooh. Do we? I will bet you we see the trombone.
It's got to be in the background,
right?
I don't
think we'll probably get a jazz breakdown.
It's just him dumping the spit valve. That'll be a new GIF that I'll use constantly if we actually get that sequence.
That'll be like what they use as the kind of come back from break kind of moment.
Thank you for that mental image.
You're welcome.
There. Yeah. So the Romulan Borg stuff.
Yeah, which
you and I aren't really great at speculation, but
no.
it still conjures up very iconic imagery for fans. I'm intrigued by whatever tangential connections there are between the Romulans and the Borg.
Well, we'd, you know, floated the idea in the past that these two kind of crippled superpowers, former superpowers, might unite in some way. But do you think maybe now it would be more that one is trying to kind of take over what the other one has to accumulate power?
Well, so the Romulan agents are clearly interested in synthetics,
yes.
You know, and it's a merger of like organic and synthetic, you know, kind of sentience. That's what they're going for. Is that not ultimately what the Borg were trying to achieve? If we want to use it in kind of what we would call it nowadays, but like that's the reaching the singularity,
yeah,
you know, and I think that is ultimately the goal of the Borg. So if they're employing Romulan agents to help with that journey somehow, I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
I just hope it doesn't get too convoluted.
Right.
Like, that's my big fear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hope it's convoluted storytelling has become so popular, and I don't think it's for reasons that make any sense to me.
I think it's because there's too many cooks in the kitchen. It's just
like
too many people giving notes and saying, well, you're losing me on the A story. Do more with the B story. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, simple storytelling is really, it's a bit of a lost art to a certain degree.
It is. I think you are right in that. I think that is probably the reason the majority of the time. Sometimes, though, I feel like it's like, well, the audience, we've got to keep them constantly subverting their expectations or surprising them. Like, they're going to get bored if it's simple. And so they then overcompensate by making it so complicated and that it just gives people whiplash.
Do you know the best thing is, like, or at least what I am attracted to most in film and TV storytelling, though, is when I see characters do things that you do in real life, but you don't necessarily see on screen. And I think they should do more of that.
Like spitting venom at people.
Well, I mean, you do that to me.
Yeah.
It's very hurtful, Cam. But so I like those moments. And that's, I think, why I really did.
Our entire relationship is like that scene in Jurassic Park with Dennis Nedry.
I got no food on me. No food. jumping off that, though, what I was going to point to is that I really So one of the things that I'm attached to, though, is that relationship that Picard has right now with the refugees living mm-hmm. in his estate, you know, and it's something, you know, like, I'll say this. I know Canada is patting itself on the back quite a bit for taking in a number of Syrian refugees. I think the reason we're doing those is just we have a relatively small population here, and so we're taking like a headcount. But it's still like a pretty small number relatively. Yeah. So I don't want Canada to be patting itself on the back too much. It should be taking that much more in. But I appreciate what Picard is doing. He's living by the values that he has been exalting across the galaxy for as long as we've known him, you know? And I think like he doesn't just tell, but he shows. And I think that's like a great thing for him to do. Were we missing a great grand speech from Picard in the series premiere?
I'm sure we'll get plenty of them going forward. You think so? I it would not surprise me if we get one before he heads off into space or something, you know, at Starfleet. Well, we've seen in the trailers, there's a scene, you know, where he's at a desk with someone talking, like an admiral. Maybe it's in that moment or something in the next episode before whatever the space mission is kicks off. Because I think Patrick Stewart is probably giving some speeches. But I did like that as well. I hope we actually get more out of the people on his vineyard. Like, I think those characters actually offered something.
And it's like humans.
Yeah, you know? And I'm hoping we're not just going to jet off and leave them. And wherever the Picard series goes from this point forward, they're gone. Like, I like the idea of Picard having a bit of a normal life that he goes back to every now and again.
Yeah.
I don't know, because we didn't get that really on the, in the TNG universe. He had Robert and everything, but we only went there the once.
He kept talking about Boothby.
That's also true.
There's a lot of Boothby references for him. I think about that. How far apart were Boothby and Picard in age, though? Like, I don't think they're that far apart.
Oh, that's an excellent question. Do you think,
my guess is like maybe
20 years?
20 years, you know. So I guess that's enough, you know. Like, if Boothby's like in his 40s and he's trying to consult a 20-year-old Picard, I can buy that. One who looks like Tom Hardy, by the way.
Of course. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know. If we're taking this as a series premiere, we watched episode 1 of Discovery.
Yes.
And then we watched episode 2.
Yes.
And then we turned to each other and we're like, I'm not really sure what this show's about.
And we were way off, really, because it didn't set it up in a way that we really could have figured out what it was about based on those two episodes.
I mean, I was totally intrigued by that. You know, like, I think that's, again, subverting our expectations. I think that's what Star Trek should be doing. I get what the show's about. Like, they set up the characters, they kind of set up the dilemma, and I say that in, like, not all the mysteries are revealed, but we know what is driving Picard at this moment.
That's
which
right.
Is the search for Data's daughter.
Yeah, that's what matters more so than any sort of plot that the show's going to have. What's driving Picard? Because that's the character we've signed on board. The show is called Star Trek Picard.
It is?
Not Star Trek, like, space plot.
That'd be
Star Trek Space Plot. That'll be the Pike spinoff name. We were struggling with that one. Now we got it. Space Plot.
Speaking of Pike, who do you think had a better black hood, Dodge or Pike in the Ask Knots short trek?
The hoodie thing is getting kind of... Oh, are you talking about the actual hood over her head?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go with the Pike one.
Okay.
You know, the Pike one is the one that wins because that one was so absurd. And it's interesting that, you know, this is set, you know, like a long time after that Pike short trek, but the hoods have gone backwards in technology.
You know what? Not everybody has those the big hood dollars. These are Romulans that we're talking about. Their world was destroyed, and you're putting them down for not having 23rd century hood technology.
Well, I feel like 23rd century would be pretty cheap for them.
You'd think, but look, they've been through a lot. You know,
they're still
dealing with the effects of the supernova. Maybe their Borg overlords are like, whoa, way over hood budget. You guys keep wasting our good Pike hoods.
Yeah.
You cannot have yet another one.
Jumping off from that, though, or moving away from that, I guess, what did you think of the sort of the grounding of this whole Mars event that has scarred Picard?
Well, you and I have kept going back and forth. We've been getting different signals, you know, from what I picked up from this journalist, though, is that Picard led the rescue armada for Romulus.
Yeah.
The evacuation there. And that allowed these quote-unquote rogue synths that we saw depicted in the Children of Mars short trek. It allowed them to penetrate Mars's defenses, launch an attack while this was going on. And I think what Picard holds right now is guilt over whether his efforts to save, you know, hundreds of millions of people led to the death of about 90,000 people, you know,
right.
Which, I mean, yeah, like, I can understand this haunting him as well, but
sure.
You can also rationalize it as, is it really my fault?
Well, do you think it haunts him as much if the Federation doesn't stop saving the Romulan people? That's the thing. It kind of committed two crimes at once.
Yeah, right? But that's true, because that's the impetus for the Starfleet to say, like, why are we putting so many resources into this where we're letting our own defenses down?
Right.
And, you know, I can understand that argument, you know, so, which is good, because I don't like it when we are watching shows and it's so obvious that our hero's side of the argument is absolutely 100% the correct one.
Right.
It just makes it frustrating to watch whoever the antagonist is.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate that.
Yeah, like, I'm hopeful that, like, we're not just going to obsess over the Mars thing for 10 episodes. Like, I like that that's a jumping off point for, you know, this wound that the character has to kind of resolve by the end of maybe season one or something like that. It's not like we're just going to be delving into the Mars attack throughout 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Because that's always the concern.
So something you brought up the last few weeks, though, is resolving the role of androids within the Star Trek universe. And we've talked a lot about, like, what is really the role of these advanced artificial life forms. We're talking about, like, the Doctor from Voyager. We saw how advanced Data became. Does this not put a lot of people in a precarious position if we can just get these artificial life forms to do everything for us? And I got the sense that these so-called synths, it was more of a service role or that they were responsible for. I don't think it was a whole bunch of, like, sentient, you know, androids that all just, you know, got together and launched an attack or anything like that. So
yeah, not like a band of Data's or anything.
Yeah. That should have been his the name of his his Sinatra cover band, you know.
No kidding.
So so let's talk a little bit about, maybe this is kind of their way of resolving that whole argument about the role of synthetic life forms in the future. The hologram in the archives, which was interesting, but you notice that he said to her, she tried to crack a joke. He's like, don't quit your day job.
Yeah.
Although anybody who uses that line, I tell you, yeah, you don't quit your day job when it comes to, like, comedy either. Like,
I don't think Picard's ever been the biggest jokester.
What do you think the funniest Picard joke might be?
Oh my God.
I think it might be when he was putting on that show for the Ferengi during Menage a Trois, Menage a Troy, and he was pretending to be in love with one Loxana.
Yes, that's probably Picard's most intentionally funny moment.
Yeah.
You know, also give props to him in the Ensigns of Command where he's, like, going over and, like, polishing the plaque on the wall, trying to, like, put on this act. I thought that was fun, too.
Yeah.
But overall, a lot of the comedy of Picard is more unintentional comedy, like his discomfort or stuffiness. And you see that sometimes when he's kind of trying to be funny and loose, it doesn't play as well.
Yeah.
So, getting back to the...
But I just want to point out with regards to the hologram, she didn't really have, like, a humor subroutine or something that was very new, which tells me that they are kind of, they've been trying to dumb down the potential of these holograms. And I do wonder what that spells for the future of the Doctor from Voyager, though. Like,
yeah, no
is
kidding.
He, I have to assume he's still allowed to walk around with his holo emitter, but I don't know. What do they want to do with that 29th century technology? Are they just going to let him hang around and keep it? You haven't banned all holograms, even though they are artificial life forms like the Doctor. I don't know. We're raising some intriguing questions, especially if androids are, through a galactic truce, are banned across the galaxy.
Well, we saw with androids that, at least by the end of the Berman era, it felt like they'd taken them through the character of Data about as far as you could go. Like, where do you really go unless Data suddenly becomes, like, human, right? You know, we did the whole emotion chip thing, and then we had to back off of that. So what now?
Give him a quarter face skin.
And so I like that this new Picard series seems to have found a new way to further the evolution of the androids without just doing kind of the same Data type story. Like, this is an entirely new type of life form that we can explore and filter it through the Star Trek mythos of understanding, you know, the importance of humanity. I think that's a really important step for this franchise.
I just realized, Cam, those flying robots from Quality of Life that Data was trying to protect because they had just some semblance of sentience.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're banned? I'd be so
I hope not.
So heartbroken.
And what about that robot war in the prototype? Although that's in the Delta Quadrant,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
But the other thing I was going to say just about the holograms is, it is very interesting to me, though, we are seeing this, what seems like the next step in evolution for the androids. But we're not getting, at least yet, we only have one episode to go off of. As you said, we're not seeing like a real advancement in terms of the holograms, which, you know, you go through those seven seasons of Voyager, you get the sense, especially through like that Flesh and Blood two-parter or two-hour episode, that's kind of where we're going in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
So I am very curious whether Picard picks up on those breadcrumbs at all, or if it's kind of just like, we're focused on more of the tenets of TNG type storytelling, not in the terms of repeating that show, but in terms of exploring the mythology of that show in a new way versus the spinoff shows.
I think it might just get too convoluted if,
especially for new viewers.
Yeah.
Who just watched Next Gen.
I think it's simple. Keep it to androids, at least for season one. Maybe broach the subject, but don't dwell on it maybe in season two, you know? But look, there's so much to pick apart here, you know? Especially because, honestly, we're also going to be getting into the whole Borg factor, where it's a combination of, you know, like, you know, human flesh and robotics, you know?
Yeah.
So that brings up other questions, which, you know, we're very much anticipating the return of Seven of Nine. Like, that's just going to be, like, a fun thing to see in the upcoming episodes too.
If you'd have asked me years ago, you know, hey, they're going to bring back a Picard show, what do you think the overriding theme of like the first season would be? I don't know that I would have said like artificial intelligence, which I think is actually great. I'm glad that it's not the thing that would have sprung immediately to my mind.
I would have, honestly, archaeology.
Sure.
Yeah.
Archaeology.
That's probably what would have come to mind.
I might have thought Romulans.
Yeah, maybe.
But perhaps. I wouldn't have thought as much of the drive between his relationship with Data. I don't know that would have been the thing that would have immediately jumped to my mind.
Yeah, but you know, it's such a perfect jumping off point. I agree with you, mm-hmm. but it's also such a perfect jumping off point to get this character motivated through something that we, the audience, also care about very, very much here.
And maybe we shouldn't have ignored the fact that when it came to the TNG movies, Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner were the two, they were the lead characters of all the movies. They were obviously the ones that appealed to the more general Star Trek audience. So it makes a lot of sense to ground those characters as an important thematic, you know, through line of Picard.
So we do know that Riker and Troy are going to appear. We did get a little bit of a Worf shout out, however brief.
That did not send a check to Michael Dorn's house, though.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about what our other characters are up to, but I don't need us to spend an extended period of time with them.
Well, I barely know these new characters,
I want
to get to know these characters. I'm sure we're probably going to get Riker and Troy, I would think, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I think probably the next episode or so. Yeah, like, I'm ready to get to know this new universe, these new Picard characters. You know, I just think that's the smarter thing to do.
Like,
you know, let the new characters have their time in the spotlight. Get us to love them before, you know, like Star Trek Discovery. You know, a show that has its ups and downs in season one, but it spent its time establishing who its crew were in season two. Then we got Pike. Then we get Spock. You know, kind of the established characters to kind of step in. But by that point, we were really on board with all the new characters.
Yeah.
So I think that's the smart thing with Picard. Show us enough of the elements of the established TNG universe to kind of help ease our comfort zone between sort of the older ideas and the newer visuals and feel of the show. But then let's go off on a new adventure and worry about, you know, the other characters later.
Are we going to get a central antagonist introduced at some point?
I wondered about that because a lot of the allusions to like the Mars attack were very like Pearl Harbor related. And so I wondered if there's going to be like a definitive foe that they're up against.
Yeah.
Because it's like a World War II parallel as well as the Dunkirk reference as well.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking like, is there going to be a very definable like villainous force in this show.
Do you think, did you get villain vibes from Nurok at this point?
No.
Like, he seems like a different kind of character, you know?
Yeah.
He's also in the main cast. I'm intrigued what his motivations are, you know? He's just a character that jumped out to me because, you know, like I said, I haven't really seen someone like that in the Star Trek universe before.
But also, I mean, how big of a force could this be for what appears to be, from my very uneducated point of view, of just seeing
very
the trailers.
Very uneducated.
Yeah.
Very.
Of Picard and kind of a ragtag crew in a ship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it can't be the equivalent of, like this World War II illusions they're making.
I think what it ultimately may come down, though, is maybe the antagonist is more revealed in the last, like, episode 7 or 8, mm-hmm. you know? Or, you know, because, like, do you really want to watch, like, Picard and company just get chased around? Or do you want to see them just chasing around a bad guy, and at the end of every episode they're like, I'll get you next time?
No, it's definitely not.
So
yeah, I know that the franchise has been often obsessed with like con figures, and I, you know, I don't think we need one, so I'm totally down for just, let's deal with the political intrigue, let's give Picard a very complicated situation he has to navigate, and that's enough.
Well, I guess I'm going to scratch my descendant of General Chang off my list of villains I want to pitch you, Cam.
I would not rule out some sort of Borg Queen presence, though, because we've seen that the Borg are tied in here, and the Borg Queen is, you know, inevitable.
Just like Thanos.
That's right.
We would love to see the Borg Queen back, you know.
Like, yeah.
There's chemistry between Alice Kriga and Patrick Stewart,
yeah.
and Brent Spiner as well. I don't know if there's really going to be a role for a reactivated B4 with Data memories, but if he's actually interacting with our character somehow, I'm all for maybe another revival of the intrigue that he had with the Borg Queen.
Though, what's more interesting, though, the Borg Queen coming back as, you know, this great villain of the Borg that we've seen in all these other episodes versus, like, a Borg Queen that realizes, like, that for the Borg to continue, they have to have, like, a relationship with Picard.
Yeah.
And we actually get to see them kind of, like, uneasy allies. I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah, because I have to think, like, maybe the Borg are at the point where they have to reevaluate their motivations. What if what he was doing with, you know, that kind of Borg cooperative, what if they shifted the Borg into multiple different factions somehow? Like, that never was resolved, you know, mm-hmm. and it was never even addressed in Voyager. I think there's the opportunity to explore the idea of, like, kind of disparate factions within otherwise uniform species. And I think that exists with the Romulans, and you can draw that parallel potentially with the Borg as well, which I'm intrigued by.
And how does the Borg Queen feel about suddenly this diversifying Borg?
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting to me. Maybe those are the stories I want to see.
Yeah, she's only the Borg Queen of so much.
That's right.
Borg, you know, so.
Yeah. So I think, you know, this is a pretty promising pilot.
Yeah.
You know, for our first episode, like, I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to seeing where we're going. I think it was definitely a more confidence-inspiring first episode than Discovery had.
Yeah, I think we know how Discovery had a lot of behind-the-scenes fractures. We never mm-hmm. heard any of those stories coming or emerging from Star Trek Picard.
No, the only real thing we heard was that Michael Chabon is not going to be doing season two, but it seems like it's totally, you know, creative just choices on his part.
He is going to be involved. He's just not going to be
showrunner. Yeah, not showrunning it, I should have said.
He's continued to be the executive producer, but he has mm-hmm. another deal with CBS All Access, and he's going to be pursuing an adaptation of his own work that he's very passionate about. He just said, like, the problem is I can't do two passion projects simultaneously, but I'm still going to be involved. So I don't think
it's a drama-free scenario. Like, it's not the, you know,
behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's not like the tumultuous stuff going on with Discovery at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that's the case with Picard. And I think that's the benefit of the show.
Yeah. Okay, any final thoughts, Cam, on Remembrance?
No, I don't think so. I'm just excited to see where this goes. I thought it was a lot of, I don't know if I say fun. And I kind of like that. I like that it wasn't, boy, that was a, you know, wham, bam, you know, hour of entertainment. I like that it was more contemplative. It had a slower vibe. It was really kind of easing me into the spirit of this show as opposed to the, you know, kind of Discovery first episode, which is kind of grab you by the lapels and kind of toss you around for an hour and then leave you kind of confused and questioning where you're going next. I'm totally down for this approach, and I can't wait to see where Picard goes and track it on this podcast.
Okay, so agreed. We'll come back next week and do another review.
No, I'm out.
Oh, okay.
You know, after this episode, you know what? I'm happy with what I got. I'm done.
I'll just return on the mics myself, and just you listeners will get a soliloquy from me.
That's right. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, I guess we know we're doing episode 2 Picard next time.
You got it. But for people, look, day of, check out our YouTube channels. Like every Thursday night, we'll have a video up. You'll get our instant thoughts from that. Otherwise, we're going to have the podcast coming out just a few days later, so we can go even more in depth. But keep checking on all of our social media, and you'll be up to date on our thoughts on Star Trek Picard going throughout season 1.
For sure. You can, of course, also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Venom Spit Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Neurox Stubble.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies. Do I see?
Transfer complete.